system. Someone without access to the sample.
I have been doing a little hacking in here, as a matter of fact.
Computers and the programs will start thinking, and the people will stop.
I still don't understand why you want to break into the system.
God, man, somewhere in one of these memories is the evidence. If I got in far enough, I could reconstruct it.
All right, everyone, welcome to the June 29th edition of the In the Now show. This is your host, Slip Mode, along with
Bob.
Bob is in the house. So it's just us two tonight. And
Bob is in the his house.
In the hizzy.
The hizzy for shizzy for rizzy.
Oh, yeah. So we will definitely be bringing you a lot of good information this show. Of course, we don't have other people that we have had here in the past, but they will be back in the future. And stay tuned. All right. Just had to have a small bit of coordination there. Now we're back. Well, here's the first story of the show. Actually, I have quite a few. This is a really neat thing I picked up on. Sometimes I'll talk about it during the show, during shows in the past, of other things outside of technology that you typically see nowadays. It's an article that basically talks about the Incas, and they have something called a quipu, which is a decorative object that is actually created together. And Gary Yurton, which is a professor of anthropology at Harvard University, recently analyzed the complicated knotted strings of the Inca decorated object called the quipu and found that they contain a 7-bit binary code capable of conveying more than 1,500 separate units of information. So he's really researching that to see what he could possibly create language-wise out of that. There are a few people out there that say it's nothing more than just a complicated design. It's not meant for conveyance of any language or symbolism or anything like that.
Everybody knows the Incans were elite binary hacksaws, all right?
Of course.
Obviously.
Pound Incas, baby. No, I'm just joking. So, but he has discredited that, saying, like, you know, the first form of language that was actually, like, written was pictorial. So, on top of other things, it's a large article, but it's definitely really neat to show that there have been technologies in the past, even if this one isn't right, even if this one isn't a 7-bit binary code. There have been other proven technologies to have been created and also lost over the years and refound. So still a lot to learn from the past. All right, another bit of interesting stuff as far as cell phone features. I don't know how fast or how long it's going to take for this to eventually show up, and I don't even know if anyone really cares about it. But there's a company called GeoVector, which is basically creating a feature for your cell phone to where you can drive past a building or a place of residence or something, and you could point your cell phone at it and grab information. Of course, there'd be something at the other end where the building is broadcasting this information. But something like the example given was going past and getting showtimes for movies, or, you know, information about a company, or you know, what the apartment rental rates are and if they have free utilities and yada yada yada. So they're working to bring that technology out. Just more crap to throw on that cell phone.
I remember the days when a cell phone was a cell phone.
Yeah, now it's a.
Can they even make calls anymore? I'm not sure.
My calls suck, but yeah. I can make them, pretty much.
But your phone can do everything else.
Well, you know what? I don't upgrade my phone every 3 weeks like a lot of people do. I actually just have a model and stick with it, and then until the thing breaks, I get another one. In all honesty, unless I really needed remote internet access, and of course it's only slow internet access that they offer now, that'd probably be the only use. And also there was I was talking to Rax, who is here in Phoenix and goes to 2600 meetings. He had a pretty interesting phone. He was talking about a new version that was coming out that allowed you to do SSH remotely, so you can get into your boxes or even VNC. So that's not quite a necessary thing for me right now. I usually turn off all SSH unless I really know I need to use it, just because there might be something out there for it that you don't know about. So I don't know. I don't really have a use for it right now.
That thing wasn't really a phone. It was a computer with a speaker.
It was.
Yeah, and a microphone.
It was.
It was. The thing was bulky and heavy.
It was.
But it could do just about anything.
Yeah. I don't know. I like those little mini laptops.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm going to get anything, I'll get a mini laptop. I'm not going to get a phone. So. All right.
What do we got next?
Well, we got a few other things here. Just a small tidbit about, there's two viruses. Well, one's a worm, one's a virus. One's called the So Big E. And basically, it's a variant of the So Big B. And what it does, and it's, of course, it hits Windows PCs. It's not Linux
of
and
course.
Mac users are immune. So Big E normally spreads via emails with randomized subject lines such as read documents and reread movie, and zip attachments containing infectious .scr and .pif files. Like its predecessor, So Big E has a built-in expiring date. In this case, it's the 14th of July. Click on the infectious attachments, and you can catch the pox. Once infected, it basically sends emails to addresses collected from files from the following extensions: WAB, DBX, HTML, HTM, EML, and text. And they said that this is the trick as the reason why it spread so rapidly. As far as the article goes, it doesn't say of any malicious things it does other than spreading like a mother. And I think that's all it does.
Imagine like a website, what's it called? The backups? History. Your website history.
Oh, yeah.
On Internet Explorer, all the email addresses.
That's true.
Wow, what a brain fart. I hate those.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just it's nothing big, nothing really to worry about. Update your virus.
Another one of those things that doesn't do anything. It's just really annoying.
Yeah. Another one that's really interesting, and I've actually seen some people in the security world try to figure out what it is, that I've seen personally that they've been really interested in, also by reading from this article, it shows that other people are interested as well. It's basically a virus, or a Trojan, actually. And they call it the 55808, which is basically one of its small characteristics that they've been able to pick up of it. It's basically the window size of the packet that transmits is 55808. A new Trojan has been making its way around the internet in recent weeks, continues to baffle security experts who have been unable to get a good handle on its behavior. ISS has been tracking the Trojan for about a month and has yet to find a copy of its code, successfully tracking it to an infecting machine. Once security vendors and officials at the Department of Homeland Security are also tracking the Trojan without any luck so far. We still don't have any idea where it's going or who it's communicating with, if anyone. Basically, the only thing they have really found out, and this article is probably 2 weeks old, so I haven't heard anything new, but I'm sure that there are some things that they're still pulling out of it now. The information that experts at this point that they have found is a portion of the hex code in the packets the Trojan sends containing the term day zero. And in security circles, the phase zero day is often used to describe attacks on vulnerabilities that have just been discovered. And so that's all they know so far. It's very interesting.
And they don't know what it does yet.
No, not yet. How it sends itself. It sends itself out. It actually goes to random ports. and it also spoofs its source address, so it's really hard to track where it comes from. I don't know, once it infects the machine and begins to run what it runs, if it deletes itself after a certain point or what, because they haven't, at least at the time of that article, they haven't found a copy of the Trojan to see what it does. But it's pretty interesting. I think a lot of people have really, it seems like one of those interesting viruses that people are going to learn something from. So I'll definitely give a full report once I find out more about what's going on with it. You know, this has been bugging me for a whole week. I've been thinking about this thing, and what it was is when I was in my security class, somebody said, according to the bugs for like BugTrack or other security mailing lists, that because he was talking about how people tout Linux as a secure operating system, saying that the number of bugs is 5 Windows bugs to 10 Linux bugs right now. And the one thing I think...
5 discovered or released Windows bugs.
Yeah. Well, the one thing, just even if it... Even, let's just say that's all the ones per... Let's say in a week, 5 Windows bugs were released and 10 Linux bugs were released. Let's just say that happened in a week. The thing that people don't really talk about, and they're now trying to... Windows, you know, people that really are into Windows would be like, see, Linux is more insecure, but a lot of those bugs that you see... are for Linux are not critical. They're not like those 5 Windows bugs are like Windows bugs that just rooted your box and they got some crap running on it, you know. The 10 Linux bugs, you know, you might find one like remote root exploit, and then the rest are like ones that could be possibly exploited in certain environments, and some of them are just like they're local. And some of them are on like obscure services that not the average person runs. So that's
another thing. All the Windows bugs, those are all with Windows. You install Windows, and you have those bugs. With Linux, like they say, there's 10 Linux bugs, but there's not 10 Linux bugs. Linux is the kernel. There's 10 bugs in the Linux community with all the open source software.
Well, yeah.
And there's tons of it.
Well, yeah. Well, we're speaking about like in general, like a Linux distribution.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the kind of thing, you know, there are bugs everywhere, but if you're hearing people say stuff like that, tell them to really look at what how critical each one of those bugs are and what they do. Of course, like, it is more popular now to write more vulnerabilities for Linux just because, you know, more people are using it. So it's going to happen, and there's going to be bugs, and it's going to be fixed. But don't let that be. I just can't stand it when people bring that up in the argument, and all of a sudden they just want to tout like Linux as the most insecure machine that's ever like, you know, been created. I can't stand it.
Hey, why don't you go ahead and try and break into my Linux box, pal? Good luck.
So, people got to be balanced. I'm balanced when I talk about Windows. I believe I've said positive things at times too. So, I just don't like people. Just touting things off and not really looking at all the facts.
What's up next?
All right, this is one that spotted your eye. It's the Xbox One.
Oh yeah, I love this one.
This one's really neat and it's tough too at the same time. Basically, a group of Xbox security researchers say they have found a way to run Linux on an Xbox game console without a so-called mod chip, and will go public with the technique if Microsoft won't talk to them about releasing an official Linux bootloader. The researchers say that they want Microsoft to release a signed Linux bootloader software that runs when the computer starts up and up to load and give control to the operating system that will allow Xbox users to run open source operating system on the console without installing a chip. They're saying if they added a Linux bootloader, it still wouldn't help piracy makers run pirated software on the machine, as far as like the pirated Xbox games is what we're talking about. They're hoping that Microsoft will help them out, because either way they're gonna try to do what they can to make use of this machine. So they're gonna either release what they supposedly have, or Microsoft come out and do it themselves. But what they're talking about is that their method will actually allow more use for to pirate Xbox games if they used the methods that they've come up with.
I think basically Microsoft doesn't want people to run anything except Xbox games on an Xbox because that's where they make their money. They lose tons of money on selling an Xbox, and they make all their money back on selling games.
Yeah, and they wouldn't help their Linux argument any better if they actually allowed Linux to run on their machines.
Yeah, I don't see it happening, but I think I think what they're doing is good if they really have the thing and giving Microsoft an option. I think that's instead of just like here it is.
Yeah, because they said that they do not want to advocate piracy. They just want to use the technology for other things it could be used for, which is running Linux or, you know, shoot, if somebody wants to run Windows.
Anything.
Whatever they want.
It's a full-blown computer.
Microsoft's response, in a way, is kind of responses. We're very committed to respecting others' intellectual property, and we request the same respect applied to our innovations and those of our partners. The company said in a statement, our primary concern is game counterfeiting, which impacts our development partners who are developing games for the Xbox. So, you know, if that's what they're looking for to do away with, then maybe, you know, let people use the machine for what they'd like to use it for, in a legal respect of saying let them use another operating system on there and, you know, and probably help do away with people pushing harder and harder to do it other ways, which also include pirating Xbox games, which they're not very good.
I wonder if...
that's my little bit of propaganda, I guess.
I wonder how the DMCA is going to play into all this, because as you know, the Xbox has certain DRM implementations in it, and if they do release this technology to run Linux on it without needing a mod chip, it is certainly is not intended to be running Linux. And wouldn't that be circumventing some kind of copy protection or whatever?
Well, if Microsoft was the one that came out with the bootloader, it wouldn't be circumventing.
No, but I'm saying if Microsoft says, like, screw you guys, we're going to do this, and they're like, okay, well, screw you, we're going to release this.
Oh, yeah, then they'll do what they've done to all the other mod chip makers, which is...
Well, it's not really a mod chip, though. It's just...
They didn't exactly describe all the things, but they did say that one thing is that you can actually reflash the BIOS through your Xbox memory card.
Hmm.
So I think that might be it, where they would reflash the BIOS. But I don't know. There's some other things in here that are conflicting, saying it's a little bit more than just that to actually get the job done. But...
I guess we'll find out soon enough, huh?
Yeah. Well, it's definitely interesting, and I don't think Microsoft ever gambled for what was to come when they released the Xbox. You know, it's another thing just nowadays that people don't realize when you give all this power in somebody's hands, you know, especially cheap, you know, here's a whole PC for $200, you know, or like, you know, a cell phone that does all this crap, you know, and if they want to put, like, GPS in it and yada, 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 like, you know, what can GPS be used for? You know, people whine about that being used for, like, terrorism, you know, and pinpointing targets and GPS, period, just GPS systems and you know, giving us antennas and giving us wireless equipment and radio and, you know, it's, I don't know, it's, you're just never going to see an end to... modification and manipulating technology to do other things.
And all this stuff they give us, and just think about what they've discovered that they haven't released yet.
Yeah.
The stuff that they keep secret for themselves.
Yeah, they just don't, you know, one thing to add too is that, you know, even though this has been happening for a long time, things like pirating music and stuff like that, I don't see Britney Spears, you know, running out of money. You know, I don't see, you know, Metallica not being able to go buy a new guitar. You know what I mean? Everyone's still getting a lot of money, you know, so.
Yeah, but they can't have their $5-10 billion mansions all over the country.
Yeah.
What a world.
You know, in all honesty, music in the first place was not made to make money. It was never made to make money. It was made for many reasons, mostly celebration,
storytelling,
you know, but none of it was for profit. nowadays, I mean, that's the whole reason, you know, is that people want to become musicians is profit, you know. Coding was never made for money. I mean, in all honesty, it was in its original form, it was actually to see what you could actually do with it to begin with.
Yeah, it was a bunch of hackers sitting in a garage in Silicon Valley saying, hey, this stuff is cool.
Yeah, and trying to see, you know, what they could do with it. You know, there are some things to where you could say, yeah, code could be sold and yada, 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 but people just don't realize that just because you're not making some money on some sort of item or thing that exists out there doesn't
mean...
It does not mean that, you know, people need to be treated like criminals. I know that for some reason, I mean, we're in a capitalistic society and, you know, we need to make our money and stuff like that, but some things have gone overboard. And we'll talk about that a lot later with all the articles we have on SCO and all that nastiness.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
All right. Heading on again. Oh, you know what? While we're in the middle of the show here, I'm just going to give a brief bit of words. The email address for our show, because we get quite a few listeners, is slipmode@quest.net. So email us, tell us anything you'd like to have us air on the show, send a story in that you'd like us to read, ask a question to any of the people here. And also you'll find, if you go to slipnet.org, which is my website, some people actually get this show off the oldschoolfreak.com site, where Duel over there graciously mirrors our show. You can go over to slipnet.org and hit the forums, or just hit In the Now right there, and there's a link to the exact forums. And we have an In the Now forums. I post one for every show, and allows people to add anything else and basically build community on top of the things we've talked about there. So, because it's all about spreading the word, and it's all about getting information out. And, you know, there are a few places out there we can get information, like the information we give out. Of course, we are different people, so we actually have our own takes on the information. So that's what's special about our show. And other shows out there, like Radio Freak America at oldschoolfreak.com. So yeah, give a shout, post on the boards, and do your thing. All right, we're going to move on here to kind of the stuff we were talking about just a minute ago about file sharing and songs and all that stuff. There's a bill out there that would let the FBI probe file sharing. The bill, which is H.R. 2517, the Piracy Deterrence and Education Act of 2003, instructs the FBI to develop a program to deter online traffic of copyrighted material. It's doing a bunch of things to get the FBI more involved with piracy and enforcing of intellectual property rights. It gives them a chance to scare a lot of the users into thinking the government is after them. The R.I.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, you must fear. The RIAA and the Motion Picture Association of America applauded the bill, of course. So it's just they're trying to get more at you, as far as they can't. They learned that they can't stop it from happening. They learned it's hard to find out where you're at. They learned it's hard to find out to track it. So they don't. They're really at a loss as far as controlling this thing. So maybe fear is the next tactic that they're working on. And also,
I was surprised. I figured that'd be like the first thing they do. That's always the first thing they do, is try and scare you into doing something.
Yeah. It's kind of like going to church sometimes. I hope I don't offend anybody, but a lot of it's fear tactics. You know, you're going to go burn in hell if you don't do this.
Give us your money.
Yeah. I'm not saying anything bad about religion. I'm just saying that is true. Come on, it's true.
Yeah.
I'm not downing religion. I'm just saying. Okay. All right, well, this is another article, too, that goes along with what we just talked about. Senator Orrin Hatch of the Senate, he's the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said Tuesday, which was back on June 17th, I believe, he favors developing new technology to remotely destroy the computers of people who illegally download music from the internet.
Such BS.
He said damaging someone's computer may be the only way you can teach someone about copyrights. No, dude, they know about copyrights. They just want their songs. Is it right? Maybe not. But are you telling me to destroy their whole computer? I don't think so, because they may be doing something that could affect someone else. But when you destroy a computer, that could be somebody else's computer. That could be so many things on that computer. I mean, somebody could run their company. You know, if they have a home business and they use that computer, what if somebody has their QuickBooks on that computer? What if somebody has their homework? What if they have their whole PhD term paper on there? And they just wanted to try one stinking song and they all of a sudden get their computer destroyed? Give me a break.
Yeah, well, I think that's the idea. It's just another scare tactic. I don't even think they could do something like that, like, technically.
Yeah. You know, unless they try to use some sort of virus, but then wouldn't they be doing something illegal?
Not if the government says it's okay for them to do it, because they have tons of money.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
So, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's actually flying, so I don't think they're actually doing anything with it, but it's just funny to see what some of people with authority out there will think that they can do things about the situation.
This reminds me of a while ago, there was a whole deal about privacy, and there was this one guy who said that, like, everybody's information should be available, and then a bunch of people were like, here, everybody, here's this guy's information. Why don't you go ahead and give him a call and tell him what you think? And that died out real fast.
Yeah, in all honesty, there are things out there. Okay, if we're in, like, a perfect society, which, as you could tell, just by example from The Matrix, saying we built a perfect society didn't work, because we're just not built for that. You can't give out all this information. You can't do it, because even if you trust yourself or your family or friends or people you know, it doesn't mean there's somebody else out there that wants to use it for their own gain. But that's actually a little bit different than what we're talking about with that article, but yeah, it's... All right.
Oh, another note on that that privacy thing. There's a new quote-unquote feature from Google. Just a hop, skip, and a jump away. Just go ahead and put in your phone number, and it'll tell you who it's registered to, the address, and it'll give you handy little links to maps there. Isn't that nice and handy?
Interesting. Yeah, there's been plenty of things like that. Like, even at H2K, too, they had... and he was there at H2K, actually. I forget his name, but he comes every year, and he actually has a database that they constantly build upon where they sell information. And his whole point of being there was, like, your information's out there, bub. And, you know, you got to factor that into things. And factor into things of how not to give out information. One of the big things, you know, nowadays you got to watch out, possibly I see coming in the future, is when you have a child, that their DNA gets registered, much like their fingerprint gets registered. And to me, a fingerprint or DNA is actually the sole owner of the person it's coming from, and they have the utter right to making that decision whether that should happen or not. And I don't think anybody should have the right, government or anything, to take that from you. Because, you know, I was talking, and I talked to my dad a lot, and he has he's really understanding of the fact that of things that are going on that some people don't quite see, and that, you know, a lot of times there's all this control that people are implementing for a little bit of safety. But in the end, you will not have any freedom once there is all this control in place. And you may feel safe, but you won't feel safe after you realize you have no more freedom.
I wonder how long until they start tattooing barcodes on the back of people's necks.
Yeah, then... That's one thing I do believe in religion. I will not have the mark of the beast on my body, which I completely believe. Even if you don't believe that it comes from angels and all that other stuff, you know, like hypothetical beings, you know, just in general, the idea of Satanism or the idea of chaos and which is basically everything that goes against humanity. Having a universal tracking system of humans and universal currency, and how Amazon.com monitors all the products you buy and sells that information and all that stuff. They say so they can market to you better. But all that stuff can be further used to categorize you, control you, and limit you, which is not good to humanity.
Moo.
That was a cow, if you guys don't know. All right. That's my rebellious portion of the show. All right. I'm going to move on to this small article about the United States Army has purchased $471 million worth of software.
From who?
Microsoft.
No way.
Yippee. Yeah. And the U.S. government is investing aggressively in technology as part of its war on terror and focus on national security. So they did pick Microsoft to upgrade or beyond 494,000 personal computers in the U.S. Army. So I don't know what to take of that. I really don't know what to say on that, but it's there. I don't know. Just made me think, and it just made me want to bring it up in the show. It's
what about the anti-terrorist stuff when it comes to things like this? Blue screen of death, computers go down, terrorists go killing.
No, you can't. Let's not make that broad a statement. Maybe if they're all on Windows 95.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, in all honesty, I'll say that Windows 2000 and Windows XP is pretty solid. You may not like the design behind it, or you may not like what the company does with the OS, but I mean, it stays up. But, yeah, they dumped a lot of money into it. That's just something to add. You know, sometimes we talk about, you know, other countries moving over to Linux, benefits of that. So it just, you know, just gives you more information about what people's take on operating system use and or software choice and operating choice. So.
It's a good thing Microsoft got all that money, too. That they're hurting. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, definitely need the money.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, they're not going to purchase the... they're not going to purchase it just because you don't, you know, out of charity, you know what I mean? But,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, we're going to move on to the next bit of our section, which will probably last most of the show, continuing here on out. And
finally,
this is the SCO versus IBM Mud Wrestling Tournament. That's right. And we got it here, live, on the In and Out show, and we're going to be talking about all the blows and everything that happened. So, we've talked about this many times in previous shows, and of course we're going to continue to carry this. You know, for some reason, I feel like this is my version of the 2600 Kevin Mitnick saga. You know, they follow it for like 2 years, you know, and they're talking everything about it. So, well, this is
yeah, we've been on this for about 6 or 7 months now, huh?
Yeah.
Since January.
Yep. So it's a pretty large thing. All right. Well, we could actually spend the whole show on it. I mean, we could spend the whole show and extend the show to 5 hours if we wanted to. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring up some of the highlights of things that have been going on just recently. Basically, start out, SCO now seeks $3 billion from IBM instead of the $1 billion. It seeks $1 billion in damages from IBM's alleged breach of its contract with SCO for adding 80 so lines of code, which is worth $1 billion to them, possibly, proven or not proven. Another billion for the breach of Unix contract signed by Sequent, which IBM acquired in 1999. And another billion for unfair competition. Unfair? You mean they actually just created competition? That's unfair. SCO also seeks more for misappropriation of trade secrets and punitive damages. The suit specifically blames Linux founder and leader Linus Torvalds for allowing proprietary code into Unix.
That bastard.
Yeah. Torvalds aided IBM over the rights Big Blue sided with IBM over what rights Big Blue has over its code. IBM is the sole author to a particular piece of code has full copyright rights, and they, not SCO, can use the code they wrote themselves in a way that they see fit, which is assuming that there is no SCO code. Prior to IBM's involvement, Linux, this is what SCO had said, prior to IBM's involvement, Linux was the software equivalent of a bicycle. Boy, are these guys naive. Unix was the software equivalent of a luxury car. Also missing is a statement it is not possible for Linux to rapidly reach Unix performance standards for complete enterprise functionality without the misappropriation of Unix code methods or concepts to achieve such performance and coordination by a large developer such as IBM. Come on. They're just saying right there that people at home can't figure out how to write code just like somebody else that sits in an office to be able to write enterprise functionality software.
Linux is a bicycle? Please, Linux is like a Ferrari that people are giving away for free.
Well, I mean, Linux, I don't want to tout Linux as like the best thing in the world, you know, because there are other things out there that are pretty good. But right there is just...
It is certainly not a bicycle.
It's certainly not a bicycle. And it's certainly... Linux can't... Okay, that whole thing right there was all slander, basically. The whole thing was slander. Because Linux has achieved a lot, and a lot of people haven't realized, or maybe they didn't know until they saw it, that people can collaborate, not have to be having, you know, what typically a company has with investments, which Linux has got investments, but not in the beginning, starting with investments, office building space, computers, you know, people were just organizing it and doing it over the internet. Now it's expanded, and people have... You know, there's various factions where they've actually got money and yada, yada, yada. But, I don't know. That's just... I just want to clue you guys into the slander that's happening. Which basically means this isn't about... You took my code and it's copyrighted and we won our damages. This is a battle, okay? Why is that battle there? Why is the question. Why?
Microsoft pays Go a lot of money.
Well, that's very interesting. And they also license SCO licensing, too,
yeah,
which is very interesting.
Which has happened recently, it's not.
Yeah.
It's been very recently.
So let's, you know, let's cut the crap, okay? That's what we're going to try to do. The suit also adds illegal export issues stemming from the worldwide availability of open source software. SCO claims IBM has breached its contract by making multiprocessor operating system technology available for free distribution to anyone in the world, including residents of Cuba, Iran, Syria, North Korea, and Libya countries, to which the United States controls exports. The open source technology IBM released can be used for encryption, scientific research, and weapons research, the suit said. SCO also detailed one element of the technology that it asserts IBM copied the remote copy update RCU system for relieving some memory bottlenecks in multiprocessor servers. It appears, and this is what a little conclusion, it appears that the RCU indeed stems from work of the Dynex/PTR. In a paper on his website, including IBM's Paul McKinney, says RCU was included in the Dynex/PTX in 1994, and the Linux Scalability Effort website says the RCU patches are based on original Dynex/PTX code released by IBM under the GPL. Talbers accepted the RCU into the kernel in October of 2002. All right, let's address what they said first, which is the illegal exports and all that. Okay, basically what that's saying is like, oh my goodness, you know, you're putting a capable operating system in the hands of somebody that could use it in a multiprocessor environment, which equates to power computing or supercomputing to develop, machines that do high-end things, weapons technology and all sorts of stuff like that, high-end rendering, scientific research, and, running equations. And so that right there, honestly, okay, you know, we don't want that kind of stuff in people's hands. We want that control. So that's something actually that maybe needs to be thought about. And that doesn't mean that Linux is outside of that realm of trying to do something to control that, being that it's open source, because... Well, let me back up for a second. This really has nothing to do with SCO, that statement right there. That's something that has to do with the United States government on whether they want to have something exported or not. And that's something that is totally outside of SCO's case. They're just trying to actually throw whatever they can at this whole suit. You were going to say something, Bob?
Yeah, but I forgot. But this kind of reminds me of like a schoolyard shoving match.
It is.
SCO's like... Teacher, this guy's doing this. Get him in trouble, because I don't like him.
Yeah, and Sko's a guy, you know, that's the instigator and you know, plants something on the kid or, you know, it's pretty ridiculous.
IBM should just go sit down on a bench and just say, come at me. Because they haven't really done anything.
Which is exactly what they've been doing, actually, so far. Now, this talking about this RCU system and that code being there, or the ideas of it were based on, you know, the system that SCO had used. Okay, is it possible someone else's code ended up in Linux? Yes. But is all of Linux, or even a high percentage of it, written from other people's code? No. Now, if it ended up in there, okay, something ended up in there, maybe there will have to be damages paid. But it's certainly not $3 billion, and it certainly can be rewritten. Like, okay, I think when SCO is basing it on licensing fees owed, saying, okay, you used our code, so you owe this licensing, I think the licensing that they're using is the licensing for, like, the full cost of the Unix operating system as they sell it. But let's just say you used 1,000 lines of code out of their operating system that has millions. Shouldn't you use a percentage, like prorate it, where, like, well, okay, we use like 1,000 lines, and you go to 1,000,000 lines, so we're only going to pay, you know, 0.01% or something like that, instead of its full cost. You know, the whole thing is just, it's actually, okay, this brings me back, the whole thing is convoluted, right? And if they keep throwing out new crap all the time, so it just stays in the courts forever, okay? That's how it's going to work. Okay, I don't know if anyone really knows this, but if you've seen the movie Tucker, or known about the Tucker car developed back, I think it was the late 40s or the early 50s, the Tucker car was an automobile that was ahead of its time. It had the engine in the back of the car. One thing that was just unseen. It also had seatbelts. No one ever heard of seatbelts. It had breakaway windows to where your head didn't go through the windshield, that's not the purpose. It's when you get in a car accident, the window doesn't break all over the place and the glass just cuts you to shreds. There's so many other innovations in his car, and they had the big three back then, which is the biggest three automobile manufacturers. And they basically did the same thing that's happening now. Put all these contractual things that said happened, you know, said that he did all these things, said that the money that he raised for the car, because he was just an independent guy, the money he raised for the car never went into the car, and he was robbing from the people that helped him out, because he went around and got investments from just everyday people, including companies. And go watch the movie Tucker, and you'll see how he was so convoluted. They said such complete lies that the Tucker never got out. They made 50 cars, and then ever since Tucker, every car had a seatbelt, every car had breakaway windows, and a few of the other safety features he had implemented. And it all started from this man here. So that's what's going on right now. I don't think SCO is really so excited about Unix. I think they're excited about Microsoft helping them screw over Linux. You'll see that there's no other Unix manufacturers getting upset at Linux. And you'll see just by the level of things that they keep throwing out, it's like they throw something out and they're like, well, you know, we might be able to lose that point right there. So let's throw more out. See, they're doing what they can to put things out there. If they really had a legitimate thing, they'd be like, look, here's the code. Look, you have it. Okay, let's go to some place to decide how much penalties as far as money we are owed. I get paid a check. You guys have to remove that code and do something with it. And have a great day. But it's not. It's far beyond that. It's just, it's a whole stupid match.
Very stupid.
But it could, you know, it could have some bad side effects. But I generally believe, instead of in the case of Tucker, where you're fighting one man and his small company versus a whole gigantic open source community full of intelligent people, I think the battle is going to be much harder. This was a small article from a guy that was actually just going over the whole case, and I just wanted to say something about that anti-competitiveness. He basically said, rather than being unfair competition, what likely occurred between SCO and IBM was healthy competition, the kind that helps consumers and the economy by pushing quality up and prices down and increasing efficiency. This is exactly what Linux does. So this is just a big corporate game. It's happened before. It's happened before Tucker. It happens after Tucker. It happens all the time. Except this is just a larger thing. All right. This is we're going to talk more about the pathetic things that SCO has done. Linux users protest the $3 billion lawsuit against IBM. On June 20th, protesters gathered in front of Linden Software Company, SCO, to oppose the company's more than $3 billion lawsuit against IBM. Linux users, many from Utah County, held signs and marched while chanting their objections. So basically, they're out to represent and say what they have to say. And I've got some images of some of the signs that SCO put up outside their building. And if you see these images and what
they
say...
These are very high quality. It looks like they spent a lot of time on them.
Yeah. But on top of it, the messages they have to say are so off base. It's like, you know, it's like a stupid pissing match. It's not... all logic and respectability has gone out the window. The things that they say are ridiculous. One of them shows this fat girl with holding a marijuana leaf, and she's got this marijuana leaf on her shirt, or a joint, and she got a marijuana leaf on her shirt. Says, "Legalize stupidity. Smoke Linux." What the hell does that have to do with? Look, guys, you took our code. We want our our due damages. You know, we're going to get that money, and we want you to stop using it. If that's really the case, what the hell does that have to do with that? Give communism a try. Free Linux, and it shows Stalin. And it's a Linux saying "Jawohl" with a German hat. What the hell does that have to do with a piece of software or softwares, you know, that are useful and work, you know? Just because they have possibly, you know, some of your lines of code, all of a sudden they're just like the worst things that's ever walked. Here, who's down with the OPIP? And it's like a hip hop kind of thing. And the OPIP means other people's intellectual property. Don't you think, since Linux have written, you know, the community has written so many things, don't you think they couldn't have written these other things as well? I mean, come on, these aren't like non-high school graduates, not saying people didn't graduate high school, but I'm trying to paint a picture here. You know, general retards that code this operating system, don't you think that they could have made the damn code themselves? It's just, I don't know. My son stole code and republished it. And all I got was this stupid, lousy T-shirt, and it says, "I love Linus T-shirt." And another one is, "I don't pay for my music. I'm not paying for my OS either, so sue me." Come on. All of a sudden, every person that uses Linux or supports it or likes the idea of the Linux community all of a sudden now steals music music. All of a sudden now. All of a sudden. Stealing software is not a crime. And all of a sudden it says, "In Iraq and parts of France," saying it's not a crime there.
In fine print.
Yeah. Oh, come on, dude. This is just ridiculous. Here, hold on. There's a "I love software piracy. It's saving me billions." Come on. That is just ridiculous. You know, and there's probably...
Yes, because I'm sure if, like, this was legit, we would really be paying them billions for this code that we obviously cannot write.
Yeah. You know, and I haven't used SCO. But this place that I might actually be working at, they support, not the SCO initiative or whatever, but their software runs on SCO. It also runs on, they're working on running on Linux too. But they say SCO sucks. That's my, that opinion is, you know, I don't actually know it for sure because I haven't used it. But if SCO was so good, you know, you'd see it be used a lot more. But instead of just going that route, just looking at what they had to say outside that office is just absolutely ridiculous. just ridiculous. Okay. Okay. Settle down here. This is a small thing about SCO here, too, where it basically announces immediate termination of IBM's right to use and distribute AIX software and files for permanent injunction. Through contributing AIX source code to Linux and using Unix methods to accelerate and improve Linux as a free operating system, because they can't do it on their own, right? They need AIX and SCO code and everybody else's code. With the resulting destruction of Unix, IBM has clearly demonstrated its misuse of Unix source code and has violated the terms of its contract with SCO. SCO has the right to terminate IBM's right to use and distribute AIX software. IBM no longer has the authority to sell or distribute AIX, and the customers no longer have the right to use AIX software. I mean, these guys are just going all out. They're just attacking everyone, you know, that has any possible... It's ridiculous. Come on. It's a whole cluster, you know, the word of crap they're trying to throw out there to just try to disseminate it. Luckily, the community is so big and people have seen the benefits of what Linux has done, that it's going to be really really hard to shape people's minds. Maybe they did this 3 years ago or 5 years ago, but definitely not now. Because it's really easy to shape people's minds when they don't know what's going on. But a lot of intelligent people out there know what's going on. And this is IBM's response. IBM's Unix license is irrevocable, perpetual, and fully paid up, cannot be terminated. This matter will eventually be resolved in the normal legal process. IBM will continue to ship, support, develop AIX, which represents years of IBM innovation, hundreds of millions of dollars in investment, and many patents. As always, IBM will stand behind our products and our customers. All right? Wouldn't that be the right thing to do for a company? All of a sudden, we're supposed to just ditch all of our customers because some company said we did something that they can't quite prove yet? Don't you think you would totally look at IBM if they ditched all their customers so they use AIX as like, look, you let us down, man. And does SCO actually really think that by telling all of IBM's AIX customers that too bad SCO thinks this and they can't prove it quite yet, so you have to stop using their software, they're going to get any more respect from those customers? Just a bad business move, I believe. So, yeah, that's it right there. And like I said, it's a mud wrestling match. You know, at first when I was like saying that, well, maybe, you know, it was they had a lawsuit, and I'm sure it was kind of, I felt it was tainted to begin with for over the code. But now that they throw all this junk out every 2 days, you know, it's
lost all sincerity.
It's lost all sincerity, and it's definitely shown SCO's colors. And so, you know, IBM's going to have to pay some damages for sure. I mean, come on. You always see that someone's got to pay some sort of damage, especially when they throw out all this information, even if it's true or not. But it's not going to stop Linux, you know. And I don't know. I don't know what the outcome is going to be, but I can definitely tell you what's happening now is ridiculous.
I can definitely tell you that SCO will not be getting $3 billion from IBM.
No, they won't even get $1 billion. No way. Well, that's my pile of stories. You have any...
Is that all we got?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we're almost to our end time. But, I don't know. I have to settle down here for a minute. Hey, Bob, is there anything else that you've noticed lately that... Interesting things just going on, and I haven't been this worked up in a long time.
Yeah, me either. This is just, this SCO thing, hard to get off of, man. It's just like,
I try not to spend my time, you know, if I talk about this SCO thing, saying like, there's no way Linux couldn't have any code, and there's no way nobody did anything wrong, and Linux is holier than thou, and I've never done that on this show, and I'm not going to do it, and,
because that's not true. That would be sinking to SCO's level.
Yeah, it'd be biased. And I've been, you know, on the level, you know, as best as I can be. And people have their own opinions. But I've been on the level. And, you know, if there is some code, it could be taken out. It can be recoded by a whole other party that doesn't know anything about the concepts of the previous code. That's how they reversed engineered the first BIOS. I think it was Compaq when they reverse engineered IBM's BIOS so they could make clone PCs.
Oh, I have a new story here. Give me just one second. It's pertaining to that BIOS thing. There's actually...
Oh, are you talking about the Linux BIOS, or are you talking about the new BIOS?
The new BIOS.
Oh, okay.
It's supposedly this high-level graphical interface BIOS that takes up a lot of space and all that stuff. It's supposed to be really cool, because obviously, as we all know, the BIOS is very, very outdated. Hang on, I gotta find it here.
Yeah, okay, I'll fill the air.
Alright, go ahead.
So yeah, make sure, you know, you can post stuff about the SCO issues we've talked about here. A lot of places already have stuff like that, where they have a story and people can post to it. But I'd like that we could do that sort of thing here with the show that we have, and the community of thinkers that we have, and see what we can come up with. So feel free to go to slipnet.org. And click on the forums there, and you'll see an In and Out forum. And there's other forums there, too, to post to. And also send an email in at slipmode@quest.net for the show. And would like to, since we have a lot more listeners now, I'd definitely like to include everyone else in the show as well. This show is for you guys as well as myself, you know, when I go out and find this information. So I'd like to make it fun for everybody.
All right, here we go. It's called EFI, and it stands for Extensible Firmware Interface. And this is supposed to replace the BIOS. And it's basically, it's like this high-level deal, and it basically has a... It puts hardware-level drivers in, so you don't need, like, driver conflicts inside Windows and all that. So, like, say you have a... You need a driver for your graphics card. There can be one cross-platform driver at hardware level, and that's basically the main deal of what this does.
Oh, okay.
So,
which sounds
code your driver once, compile it on every architecture.
Which that's very efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No more. It'll probably be a lot faster too, since it's not in the operating system.
Yeah, because it doesn't have to go through a few more layers.
Exactly.
Yeah, it sounds cool.
And it's written in C, it looks like, instead of assembly, because
okay.
Obviously, it was written in assembly way back in the day when computers were really slow, and every little bit of efficiency you could get helped. But
well, with, I mean, I guess going the route of assembly would be the better route, but I guess they're trying to make it so it'd be easier for people to code for it, because not everyone knows assembly.
Then, and it'd be able to have a lot more features. And I guess some of the stuff they talk about is like, they said one of the examples had a built-in MP3 player.
Oh, jeez.
And a BIOS. Stuff like that is kind of ridiculous, but, I mean, you don't need that in a BIOS. How often do you spend in a BIOS?
Yeah. It's just one of those fun homegrown things out there, I guess. So, is it out now? I remember reading a little bit about this before, and I didn't ever remember reading, like,
yeah,
can you download it now, or is it automatically working with some...
Intel is the only manufacturer that has supposedly released it. It's coming out on the Itanium architecture,
okay.
IA64 on that motherboard. I'm not sure if it'll ever be put in an x86 motherboard.
Do you have to... Well, Itanium is x86,
yeah,
but it's...
I mean,
it's
32-bit.
Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Do you have to... Did you read anything about it? Do you have to modify or install something on the operating system to be able to use that BIOS?
You know, I did not read anything about that in the article, and I read the whole article.
See, that's what I've been missing, is that they tell you all that, but... The last time I read that last article is that I didn't understand how the operating system could tie back to it. And they said conceptually, but oh well, that's just my wonder. But yeah, to make it work, obviously you need to have an operating system running on top of it, and this is probably
I don't know, some of these features here that they can put into this thing can pretty much almost replace an operating system. I'm sure they could throw a web browser in here if they wanted to, and they already got an MP3 player.
But it would be an operating system itself, right? it'd be another operating system.
Pretty much,
yeah.
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 It's like, yeah, basically. All right, so they have a closing statement here in this article. By the way, this article is out of the May edition of Linux Format. I don't know if anybody knows, but this is a UK magazine, and it takes them a while to get it over here. This is the latest one they had down at the store a week ago or so. Closing statement here says, put simply, EFI is the result of adding accepted best practices to the problem of booting and managing the low-level aspects of a computer. That's EFI in a nutshell. So basically, this is just the next step. BIOS hasn't changed since in like the last 20 years.
Well, let's see if it gets accepted. That's one thing. I've seen lots of things come, and they've been better than what's out there.
But it's just not what people are used to.
And they've gone away. Which was one of them was OS2 Warp, actually.
Yeah, I heard that was supposed to be really nice.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. There's a whole story on how they failed, and part of it was their own fault, but they did have a good operating system. All right, well, that is going to do it for the June 29th edition of the In and Out Show. We'll be back here in 2 weeks. Of course, you can always reach us on the forums and check us out there. See everyone in 2 weeks. This is Slip Mode signing out.
And this is Bob saying walk softly and carry a big stick.
See you then.